Okay, that was actually quite impressive. Yeah.
But you know what? It was the timing. It was the cosmos punishing you, the most positive person in the world, for being negative. Hi guys, sorry we're late. That's my fault. I'm having some Bodhi nap dramas today, but it's over now. And I am sans my child. Emma is in a building in London that moves. Emma, would you like to tell everyone what's going on?
Here I am live from. No, I'm staying in this place. It's really nice. But I realized when I got here, I was like, I feel quite sick. And then I was like, I've got really bad vertigo. Now, sometimes I get this if I go on the train backwards, which did happen. So I do think it might be partly that. But then when I was up, like, I went up to the roof and I was like, is this building moving or am I really unwell? And then I was like, the building's moving and I feel quite unwell as well.
Is it like when you get really bad seasickness, which I've had, which is that it can take the seasickness to kick it off, but then it can be like actual like day and a half until you feel even
Oh,
remotely normal?
I've had this for a whole week before, like proper vertigo, like
Yeah.
walking down the street, I just start going to the side and I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Horrible. My mom gets it as well. There's apparently this maneuver that you can do that's like tapping at certain parts of your head that works, but I've never
What?
actually known how to do it. You have to
Well,
hit with your neck, like dangling off something and then like tap certain areas.
and it legitimately works.
Yeah, because it's to do with like the crystals in your ear or something. Like, not. It's mad when you actually, because last time this happened, I was like, obviously got really into researching how I could fix it. And then, like,
Yeah.
what was causing it and like how balance works. And then, you know, when you look at stuff like this, you're like, isn't it amazing that our bodies ever work? Because every has to be
Unbelievable.
like exactly right. And one tiny thing's off and it can cause an absolute shit show.
It's amazing. Like my mum was talking about, my mum's very openly been on antidepressants for like years and years and years and years and years now. And like Sunday on Mother's Day lunch, she was talking about like all the research that she's done over the years on like the neurotransmitters in the brain and serotonin and reuptake inhibitors and everything. And she was going through it all and explaining it all. And my family were like kind of, you know, listening and picking up on it. And she was like, and then at the end of the day, I just can't help but stop and think, when once you know all this science, but how could they possibly know this? Like, how could they possibly have invented a drug that's going to solve this? She was like, I just don't understand it. And then I lose all my faith in science. And she was like, and then I remember that my antidepressants have saved my life on numerous times, and it is actually working, and I should probably just keep taking it for the rest of my life. And we were like, probably, mum, probably a good idea. But it's so funny. You do think, you're like, not only like how amazing our bodies are, but how have we figured this all out about our body? Like, it's just
Yeah. But do you know what, like that, I think that's what's so amazing about science is it's like, you know, one person will have spent, like I look at my mum's scientific career and I'm like, you've spent your whole career identifying like one very, very small piece of a puzzle that other people can use in different ways in their research to create other stuff. And I guess that's what's so amazing about science is you're always like standing on the shoulders of the people that came before you, or you're using a bit from here, a bit from there, and like piecing things together.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. Okay, so we digress.
Anyway, health and fitness.
I had 10 hours sleep, and I swear to God, I feel more fuzzy and hazy than I do when I'm running on like two.
If you have too much, right?
Yeah, but I'm so happy about it. I do kind of feel a bit like stoned, though. Okay, let's get to the questions. Is there anything on the live?
Yes, Joe is just saying, morning, Clemma. Here we go. Looking forward to recommitting for a new round. Welcome to everyone. Best, most supportive place to be. Couldn't agree more. Also, anyone that, I mean, anyone new that or that is coming back, really do try and like, this is one of the good things about having rounds is that if you just have this massive goal and like an end point that's years away, it's very easy to get distracted by it or to lose motivation or to lose focus. Whereas if each round you're kind of like, right, reset yourself, refocus. Chloe and I do this all the time as well. Like,
Yeah, all the time.
what do we always call this? Gravitating towards the norm or like re regressing
Progressing to the
towards,
mean.
yeah, to the mean. Like everybody does it. You start with these good intentions and then slowly your tracking gets a little bit less tight. You know, you started with all these intentions of going for a morning walk and now you've stopped doing that. And then you used to be training really hard and now actually you're cutting all your sessions short and you're not making time for yourself. Use this as a bit of a refresh and be like, right, what do I need to do going forward? Let's tighten things up. Let's use this first week to really ingrain these habits and then push on.
Yeah, it is totally normal. I think this is another thing. It's like, oh, why can't I stick to anything? Oh, and then you get so embedded in like a feeling of self-loathing and you throw in the towel and before you know it, 4 weeks have gone by and you're like, oh shit. And then inevitably most people then start again. But actually just accepting like, no, we all have to do this. Even athletes have to do this. Like I remember like when James was playing international rugby at like the top level, he would absolutely have times where he was like, I just feel like I'm basically trying to get through, especially, and also it was very coach dependent, which was interesting. I just feel like I'm trying to get through the week. I'm just trying to get through the session. He wasn't going into it like, fuck, we've got a massive game with France this weekend. I've got to do more. I've got to da, da, da. And like I say, it's funny. It was largely the coaching, but it is also because like, you know, life is, can be a bit monotonous from time to time. And you do have to kind of reshake your head, like re kind of invigorate your kind of connection to the goal. And reset. And it really, really helps. And it's something absolutely everybody has to do.
I was going to say something about that. Now I can't remember. Oh yeah, one just like slight thing. I think sometimes people think they need more motivation, and what they need is actually just a little bit of sleep. I was thinking about this morning, and I tweeted it. I was like, I think the number one cause of what feels like low motivation is lack of sleep. Like you can't
Exhausted.
be motivated for anything if you've not got the energy to do it, right? If you've not slept well. Whereas
Yeah.
when you have, everything does slot into place a lot easier. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done if you're struggling with sleep. But if you're not struggling with sleep and it's more just you're like, yeah, but I could stay up all night watching this show, or I could faff around all evening, like, and you actually could action getting more sleep, prioritize it, because everything will become easier if you do.
100%. This is like being a new mum is so hard. So I was just saying to Emma before we came live, I had 10 hours sleep. I went to bed at 11. I woke up at 9 and I feel like a new person. But the problem is that A, when you're a new mum, the only reason I managed to do that is because James finally came to spend the night to hang out with Bodie. So I actually could. It's the only reason that was possible for me last night. But also there's this other compounding factor of like, okay, so I went to bed at 11, but I could have easily gone to bed at like 9. But then when you've been like a mum all day, you just want to be on your own for like a couple of hours and no work. Like, because I obviously work as well. No baby, shut the door. And then that eats into your sleep time. And it's like a constant thing. Like people around you, like James always says it to me. He's like, well, just go to bed at 9. And I'm like, but that's
Yeah,
literally
you're
my
so
whole
wrong.
life. Yeah, then you my whole life, Monday to Sunday, is work, baby, work, baby, work. Like sometimes I just want to be on my but it is really, really tough. But everyone also says, and one thing I will say to any new mums watching who are like, yes, oh my God, it's so hard. Like, I relate. It does end. We are going to cut. We just have to try our best for this period of time. And I always say this, I say this on my podcast, but more often than not, your best is absolutely enough. Just do your best. I said this in a post I wrote, tread water, get to the gym when you can, try and be as nutritionally and calorically responsible with your diet as you can. Just try your best. And in a couple years, we'll be out the other side of it. Please, God, please.
Okay, right. On the live, we have morning, enjoying my first round so far. Quick question. I have a home gym set up. I have dumbbells up to 15 kilograms, a squat rack, bench, two barbells. I don't have any machines. Can I fit between the home weighted workouts and gym workouts, or would you suggest stick to the weighted home workouts?
I think stick to the home weighted workouts. Everything you with that equipment, the reason why we say like the home workouts are kind of maybe suboptimal comparatively to the gym is if we're referring to home body weight. And also, if you have not very much equipment, like a lot of people be like, I have an 8 kg kettlebell and 2 4 dumbbells. And it's like, that's not great. You can still do the home weighted workout, but that's pretty shit setup. You've got a really good setup, and I've got the fundamental lifts. You know, both the big compound movements, your squats, your deadlifts, your bent over row, your military press, your chest press, and all the little accessory work as well that goes along really nicely with that. Like, I don't know, lat raises, dumbbell pullovers, bicep curls, tricep. So it's comprehensive and it'll fit really nicely with what you've got at home. However, that being said, if you want to try MS Gym workouts, if you you know, if you want to give that a go, there will be swap functions on the app. So you can swap whatever machines that she's programmed, and there will be some kind of freeway option. Or if you know what you're doing, which with that equipment, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say maybe you do, you know what to do, what to change. I don't know.
I think the only thing that's come up a little bit in the group that I wanted to run by you, because I was giving it this advice, but they're your workouts,
The
is
rep range. Yeah, the rep range. Yeah, so don't, I'll always answer that. So basically, guys, as I just said about a lot of people have 2 4 kg dumbbells and an 8 kg kettlebell. That isn't a that's their home weight setup, right? Now it's better than nothing, don't get me wrong, but that isn't a great setup when I'm trying to train your upper body, your back, your lower body. Like, we can't do very much with that. So the reason that I give you such a broad rep range, and you'll see on the app, it's for home weighted workouts, really an 8 to 20 rep range. It could actually technically be 6 to 30, but I'm trying to, you know, trying to give you as much range as I can while also trying to encourage you guys to lift as heavy as you can. So it's an 8 to 20 rep range. And it doesn't matter. People are like, well, where do I stop? And it's like, you stop when you hit technical failure within that rep range. So let's just say one of you has at home a 10 kg barbell, right? And you're doing bicep curls with a 10 kg barbell, and you manage to get to 8 reps, and then you hit technical failure, as in you can't lift that bar one more time up into your biceps without kind of like swinging your back or whatever. That's technical failure. I'm happy for you to stop there. Now, let's say that same person, instead of having a 10 kg barbell, has, I don't know, I actually, do they go into single digits barbells? I don't think they do. Let's just say hypothetically they do, has an 8 kg barbell, and this person is now getting to 12 reps of a bicep curl instead of the 8. 12 reps in a bicep curl without having to sway or lose form, then that's their technical failure. I'm happy with either rep range. I'm happy with, or target, I'm happy with either weight lifted, because ultimately within the range that I've given you're hitting technical failure, and that's all that matters. Now, if you're getting way past 20, 30 reps plus, you need heavier weights, period. That's, I can't help you there. There is a cutoff point somewhere. We do have to guillotine it somewhere. You need heavier weights. If you've got, like, I don't know, your husband's, you know, I don't know, 30 kg, you know, dumbbell that he half chest presses with, obviously you're not going to be able to do anything with that. You need to get lighter weights. But as long as you're hitting technical failure in the rep range that I've set you with the weights that you have, I don't mind. And that will look different for all of you based on the weights that you have. I really hope that was a very comprehensive but also understandable answer.
Yeah, I think the only thing just to reiterate for people is that if so, say I've got loads of weights at home, but I've got this 8 to 20 rep range, what rep should I go for?
Well, you want to lift as heavy as you can with good form in that rep range. So you'd be aiming for, like, let's say 8 to 10 reps is what I would say.
So yeah, if you've got the option, go for like 8 to 10 reps.
If you've got the option, but again, just to be very clear about this, if you've got the option because of the weights that you have to hit technical failure at 8 to 10 reps and going as heavy as you can, do that. But some people are like, well, I have a weight, and they could be going to 15 reps before technical failure. They'll be like, I'll just go to 8 to 10 because Emma and Chloe said that.
I get
It's
that. I think that would
totally
confuse
dependent.
people is if they do have a selection of weights, then there's this huge rep range. It's like, well, what do I pick? But actually, in an ideal world, we want you reaching failure in 8 to 10 reps. If not, it doesn't matter. You'll have to do more reps to get to that failure. But remember that it's still a stimulation on the muscle. The muscle doesn't actually know how many reps you've done. It just knows, oh, I'm being stressed. I need to respond to that stress. Now, if you can create that stress with more reps on a lighter weight, fine, not a problem.
Always for all of you, lift as heavy as you can with good form in a lower to moderate rep range. But again, if you have to go to 15 reps, 20 reps, you have to go to 15, 20. And that's preferable for you hitting technical failure there than being like, oh, Emma and Chloe said stop at 10. So again, it's very nuanced. That's why I'm like, I'm trying not to be too specific re numbers, because there's like 400 people in the group, and fuck knows which weights, who's got what, where, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Chloe has a really hard job doing the home-weighted workouts, given that everyone has different equipment at home, which is why the rep range is so large. Okay. Good morning, ladies. Hanging in there, even with shingles. Got my steps in yesterday by putting some music on and dancing around my lounge. Definitely lifted my mood. Oh, I hope you're okay.
Yeah, me too.
Lauren, only bonus to being off work sick, recovering after norovirus. Oh, is catching alive. It's really not a good time. But you know what is a good time is just feeling even semi-normal after being that unwell. Like it's just the get, like you're just like,
No, I get so unwell with Nora. I've been hospitalized with it like 3 times. I get so unwell with it. It's like I'm on my like hands and knees, like on all fours, hysterically crying, vomiting up nothing because I've got like no liquid, nothing left to give, and that's when I'm like, it's been 2 days. It's time to go to hospital now.
yeah, that's exactly what happens to me. But I don't know if I'm actually just like such a drama queen because I remember Amelia and I got like food poisoning from the same thing, and I was so much worse than she was. But I'm not sure if I was legitimately worse or I was just like.
You may well have been legitimately worse than she was. It's really, I'm sorry, I'm glad that you're better. Norovirus the worst. Is it going around again? Because if it is, I'm like gonna go full old lady COVID and like not touch anything, anti-vac everything, not use any public toilets. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing norovirus again.
Right, okay, Rebecca, good morning. Back for round three. Still in fat loss mode, but very nearly there. Not sure if it will be this round or the next, but I will get there. Everything I've been doing has inspired my whole family, which is great. We're all working on the same goals. One quick question, if that's okay. Do the basics of 1800 calories, if over 70 kilograms and 100 grams of protein work the same for men? My son is 23 and has 20, sorry, 10 kilograms to lose. We worked out about 2000 calories, but should he be aiming for more protein? Does it make a difference for your younger lads? I would definitely up the protein
100%.
and maybe even the calories. But I mean, to be fair, if you've got fat to lose, he might be in a deficit there, then he would need to be, but it's not going to do him any harm.
A 2000, I can't say because I don't have, and we don't have any of your stats, your son's stats, but 2000 calories is definitely a low calorie effective diet for a man without seeing him under eat. But really, I would say, like, really, in if you're upping his activity anywhere, really, in a 2000 to 2500 range, again, I would need to know some stats. But yeah, definitely more protein. I would say, like, more around the 150 gram mark, really, for a man, like, minimum.
Okay.
Yeah, minimum. Anything else?
She says he's doing okay with 2000, but knows he has some wiggle room. Yeah, fine. I would set him a bit of a range, you know, and like it's a good time to talk about the range because that's come up a little bit as well. Like, oh, we've got this 1700 to 1900 range. Like, what should I eat anywhere within that range? Now, realistic expectations. If you eat closer to the 1700, you will create a bigger deficit and you will lose fat quicker. The reason we give a range is because it's not always possible for you to eat to that 1700, and people get really black and white about it. The range will all of the, you know, if you eat 1900 calories, you will still be in a deficit. And this is why we use the range, because so many people go over 1700 and think, well, I've ruined everything. And they haven't ruined anything. They're still in a deficit. They will still lose fat. Just slightly less than if they had consumed less calories, right? Just like saying, oh, well, if I can't save 100 pounds, there's no point saving 80. Yes, there is. You've still saved 80 pounds. Like, you need to start thinking of these targets as more like quite tangible. But if you want the best results, stick to the lower side of your target or the upper side of your target if you're doing a step target. But the range is what gives you a bit of flexibility and stops you giving up just because you've gone 50 calories over.
I had an interesting check-in last night, actually, that I, with a one-to-one client, that I would actually really also like to touch on here, refood and still being in a deficit when you think, and potentially ruining all your hard work when you really didn't need to. You were still perfectly on track. So she went out, she had a big night out, she got really drunk. Although I actually, with all the things I'd set her up with, still managed to stay in her calorie range, but woke up the next day like deathly hungover and was like, basically, fuck it. There's no way I can have this hangover and feel like this and stay in my calorie range today. So everything, then she, like everything but the kitchen sink, she ordered pizza, she ate a shit ton of chocolate, she had loads of crisps, like da 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 da. And then she was like, oh, and then I felt fine the next day and I got right back on it. Now, What's really interesting, and this applies to a hangover for specifically, but also just more broad spectrum, if you are really tired or you are really hormonal and you are finding the diet difficult that day, you'll know pretty quickly that that's the kind of day that you're having. Have a big breakfast. Spend some motherfucking calories on breakfast. Also, don't forget, like, a piece of like buttered toast is going to be like 150 calories. It's really not going to blow out the water. This is an all or nothing mindset and kind of carb fear of like, what can I have for breakfast? There has to be yogurt or eggs. It really doesn't have to be. You can have a really nice big breakfast. First of all, the first thing it's going to do is it's going to make you feel mentally and physically satiated, and you're a lot more likely to then be able to have a quote unquote normal day with your diet going forward, as opposed to being like, fuck it, and immediately ordering a pizza for breakfast, which is going to be about 2000 calories, or waiting till lunch and then just blowing it out the water. So I just encourage all of you to work with yourself. If you're waking up in the morning and you're ravenous, and you know that by trying to be strict at that point, you are going to be tripping yourself up for the rest of the day, allow for it. Okay. Have a big
Allow
breakfast.
it.
Allow it, have a big breakfast, and then see how you are the rest of the day. Chances are you're going to feel pretty satiated, pretty happy. You're probably not going to want to eat for another 4 or 5 hours, and then you're going to be okay to kind of get back on track. So think, don't give up on yourself before you've even attempted anything, and don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because you'll be surprised. Again, like what the first time I tr ever tracked McDonald's, I had such an all or nothing mindset with food that I was like, well, I can't eat McDonald's and be on a diet. And then I was like, hang on, I just had a cheeseburger, like Happy Meal, that in total was like 500 calories. Are you kidding me? All this time, I could have had a McDonald's. Now, we're not like really pushing McDonald's here, but again, food for thought. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater before you've even had a look or attempted to figure out how can I do this today, and stay kind of physically and mentally satiated with food. Just some thoughts.
Agree. I can't remember what I was going to say about that now. So we can move on.
I'm hungry now. About foods. Okay. Caroline, hi. I'm brand new to this. I'm feeling motivated and excited. I've set my calories and my macros. I've started tracking again, but I'm not making the minimum calories even when I'm overestimating. I'm using NutriCheck. Clearly, this is what I've been doing wrong for years, as I'm heavier and fatter than I would like to be, but I'm guessing that I'm unintentionally starving myself. When I'm being focused, when I'm not, I clearly fall into the fuck it bucket. Yeah. I don't always feel hungry during the day, but I do overeat, slash too large a portion for my main meal. I think I have issues with wasting food too. Any advice and tips on what healthy, quick, easy things I can eat, especially during the day? I'm a self-employed massage therapist, so I don't have time to sit and eat or have a lunch break usually. Even though my job is physical, I'm not getting the steps in. So steps and nutrition are my focus this week, and then I'll start the workouts. Thank you. Okay, yeah, we're happy for you to ease in read the activity if you're strapped for time and you have to try and figure out when and where you can make this work. So that's good. Yes, the problem that you will have been having, and what we'll want to fix with you here, Caroline, is that you are excited, motivated, have a goal, under eating, and then inevitably a few days or weeks pass, and you think, sod this, like, I want all the foods I like. I want to have a life. This is miserable. I'm hungry. And you fall in the fuck it bucket. And then you get into a cycle of telling yourself that it has to be one or the other, and it doesn't. You can achieve fat loss and get results and still eat the foods that you like and be in the calorie range that you need to be in. Hence my whole last point that I was just talking about. You can still do it. We need to work on the all or nothing mentality. Now, Emma and I don't like telling you guys what to eat when. That's on you. What foods do you like? What foods do you enjoy? What helps you hit your numbers, getting your fiber in every day, getting your protein in every day, making up your calorie target? That's on you to do. And that's the beauty of tracking, which is also called flexible dieting. It's dieting, but you can do it flexibly. So if you want to have a chocolate bar because you're on your period and you're miserable and you think it might help, then you can have a chocolate bar. It won't help, just to be clear. It won't touch the sides when you're hormonal, but do it anyway, give it a whirl. And so we don't really like doing that. I would say not eating throughout the course of the day is going to see all of you, and this is a rule for all of you, massively overeat at night and fall in the fuck it bucket at night. We'd much rather that you actually find ways to get your food in at regular intervals throughout the day. Emma, do you want to pick up from there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think well done for being so rational and insightful about this, because a lot of people are just like, no, only ever works for me when I'm really over restrictive. I must be in starvation mode because I'm not eating enough and I must just be storing these calories I haven't consumed. You've been like, do you know what? I'm doing this. I undereat and then I end up swinging back and I overeat. That's completely normal human behavior. But what happens is that most people get in their own head and they think, I only ever get results when I eat 800 calories. And it's not true. It's because they've literally never tried middle ground. Like they either eat 800 calories or 3000 calories and there's nothing in between. So the only time they've ever got results is genuinely when they only eat 800 calories, because they haven't tried for long enough eating like 16 to 1800 calories consistently over time, which is what we need to get you to. Now, I don't know your specific stats. Hopefully you've set them already. The other thing I will say, and this is a little bit of tough love coming from somebody else who's self-employed and who was a personal trainer for years and years and years. I bet that putting in another client at lunchtime makes you more money, right? And running your own business is fucking hard, but you will burn yourself out. I can guarantee your business will be better if you look after your health. Now, you have to look at the delayed gratification here, because the immediate gratification is, oh, managed to ram in another client here and I've made more money at the end of this day. But you will be a way better business owner and a way better person at what you do if you actually take time to sit down and have some lunch. You'll show up better for your clients. If that means you have to put up all of your rates by £3 an hour to make up for that extra hour that you missed, or even 30 minutes that you missed to actually sit down and have some lunch, then do it. Like, you have to take care of yourself as a business owner. Like, you are the most important asset in your business. You would pay to go and get, I don't know, a nice new massage bed or something, but you wouldn't actually take care of yourself. Like, you are the most important thing here. It doesn't work without you. You can always buy another more equipment. So I think that excuse, and by the way, I say that as someone who makes the exact same excuse. And I even had someone, like, I think on the mentorship, I'd like showed my diary because I block out what I do in different stages. And they're like, let's see yours. And they were like, where's your lunch? Like, when do you eat? I was like,
Yeah,
because for a long time I was just like, bam, between like Zoom calls, I'll just like eat something really quickly.
Yeah, I remember the end of last year and I was like, Emma, you need to stop for a minute. And I could see it every time you like would open your laptop and we'd, because Emma and I have a little chat before we come live, your face, I'd be like, I think you need a day off, babe. Like, I think you need to stop. Yeah. And you were just almost like hyper-stimulated, and you were like, and you were stressed, you could see, and you were like just literally going from call to call to call to call until bedtime. Crazy.
And I didn't even have time to go for a wee. Like, I'd use the EC method one, because when you're talking, I can mute it, go off for a wee. But like, in between that, I was like literally back-to-back Zoom calls. So it doesn't help anyone. You don't show up as well. No. And I would say at some point you have to just be like, no, actually, I need to take 30 minutes lunch break to actually eat something, to go for a little walk and to come back feeling better. So that's no longer an excuse. You're going to do that. Secondly, I would say, and I think this goes for a lot of people, and I've definitely been this person myself, you probably need to eat more at the start of the day. Now, I know a lot of people like to delay eating or eat very little initially so that they've then got more to play with at the end of the day. But this does tend to, like, over time just become a little bit worse and worse and worse, where to the point that you're like, I'm now kind of under eating during the day to make up for the fact that I know I'm going to overeat at night. But the reason that you're overeating at night is because you're under eating during the day. And what most people focus on is that overeating at night instead of the causal reason, which is that you're under eating. Now, to break that cycle, you'll have to do something which is a little bit scary, which is probably spend couple of days to a week where you eat more during the day, and you probably will still end up eating a bit more at night.
Yeah.
But get over that, and to like reset your hunger signals. And also, there's, you know, I'm more and more compelled by the research on time restricted eating that there are so many benefits to eating earlier in the day. And not just in terms of like your metabolic health, but also your mood, the likelihood you are to then overeat. There's also research that shows that satiety is increased when you have a bigger breakfast, and then smaller dinner. It's not the way that I normally eat. I'm normally like less during the day, more in the evening. But when you think about it, it makes sense. You're most active. You metabolize food better. Your ability to deal with glucose peaks at about noon. So if you're then not eating until later on, you sleep better because you're not eating and then going straight to bed while your body's still digesting food. Like, there are so many reasons that it would work better to have a bigger breakfast, fuel yourself well for the day. and then eat less towards the evening.
No, I'm completely here for it. And again, it kind of echoes back to some of the dietary advice I was giving a couple of questions ago. But I found this. I tend to eat small breakfast because I train in the morning and I don't like training on a really full stomach. But my biggest meal of the day, without a doubt, is my post-workout kind of brunch lunch meal. And then often I'll have like an early dinner that's really minimal, like not much at all, and I feel so much better for it. I feel better in the day. I sleep better at night when I don't have Bodhi. And I wake up more with much more energy. And there's so many implications on, as Emma said, it's not just metabolic health and it's not just circadian rhythm, but it's also digestively and also in terms of hormonally. It's a really nice trick to try. And Emma's right, I really like that you touched on, look, it might be a really weird week or two where you're trying to shift that back, you're trying to change your eating habits and your hunger hormones will be thrown a bit out of whack. But I found for me, it's been so much better than what I used to do, which was fast, like pretty much throughout the morning. And then eat more at night, because at night I was sat down with my now ex-husband watching films. We wanted to eat, we wanted to have a big meal. Sometimes we wanted to have a glass of wine together. But actually, this is working much better for me. So it's an
And I think,
interesting thing to try.
yeah, the other thing to note, because it is less social to eat in that way. You know, like the reason that maybe having slightly less during the day and then being able to eat with your family at night without worrying about calories, like that is of huge benefit as well. I would just consider whether you can do kind of both and whether it has to be that the meal is that big, or whether you have to consume the whole meal. Saying that, some of our clients, and this is where you have to make it work for you, are like, one of my main reasons for being here is I want to be a great role model to my kids. And I don't want to pass on diet culture to them. So if that means that I'm going to sit at the dinner table and only have a side salad while they're all having meals, that doesn't really look like mum's feeling herself, right? But if it could be more of a norm that the whole family kind of have a big breakfast, and I mean, it will benefit everyone, but if you can like change that norm, and same with like your own behaviors, even if you don't have a family, like I would struggle to make that change. I probably will make that change of eating more at the start of the day, but you just have to get into a different routine. Like normally I do sit down and have a really big meal in the evening. It's probably not the best way to eat, and it works for me, but who's to say it wouldn't work better in another way? You know, I might sleep better, I might have more energy, I might train better, whatever. So I would test it out, and I always kind of see this as an experiment. And you don't always have to think like, I don't know, you're forcing yourself to do something. You're kind of just like, it's more exciting to be like, oh, I'm going to experiment with this and see if actually this works for me, if I could feel even better, if I could get better results.
Behaviorally, though, guys, I really do recommend the big breakfast thing. If you, like I say, you're going to know pretty much, I'm going to say, as soon as you wake up, like within a very short period of time being awake today, I'm going to struggle with the diet. I'm hungry. I'm thinking about beans on toast. Have beans on toast. Have it. Go and have something big that you really want. And I promise you, you're going to find the rest of the day, it's going to be a lot more likely that you stay on track. Don't feel guilty about it not being like the quote unquote perfect kind of breakfast in terms of nutrition, or you know, it's not 400
On
calories.
top.
Yeah, it's like it's not 400 calories, it's 600 calories. And normally I can only hit my calories if I did it. Just trust me. Just trust me. I promise you, you will. I can't guarantee it, but you'll very likely have success with it. And
And
beans and toast, by the way, great one.
don't
Jack
give up after, like,
potatoes. What?
I was gonna say, don't give up after one day, because the likelihood is it won't all fall into place on one day. If you're like, yeah, well, I tried what Emma and Chloe said, and then I ended up having a big breakfast, and then I still ate more later. It's like, okay, well, like commit to it for at least a week of, I'm gonna fuel myself with this breakfast, I'm gonna sit down, I'm actually gonna enjoy it, and then like watch what happens over the week.
Yeah, love it.
All right.
Anything on the live? In comment.
Oh, Lauren's just saying that norovirus is doing the rounds, and I'm with you.
Ugh.
I'm going to start bringing anti-bac gel with me everywhere and spray the kids when they get in from nursery. It's freaking awful, but I'm so glad to be on the way back to normality. Is that like, do you, if you get it once, can you get it again from like the same part of
Yeah, I've.
you don't even become like, I mean, no, but I mean, isn't there like different strains of it? And that's why it.
Most likely, yeah. But I mean, I've had it whenever it's doing the rounds, I get it whenever. Like, but I'm a sicky kind of person. I've always got tummy bugs. I can remember just so many of my childhood memories. It's like me being sick on myself in the bed or in the car or at school. Like, just don't have a strong constitution. Okay, is that it on the live?
Yeah.
Okay. I hate it when it fucking does this.
You have to scroll all the way back up.
Yes, it's so annoying. Okay, there we go. Hallie. Hi, Chloe and Emma. One thing I've always struggled with is my nutrition for balancing running 3 times a week. I do weights, but I'm trying to reduce my calories to lose weight, eating enough that I can get through my runs. Is it a case of high carb on run days or the day after? Help. Okay, this is where meal timing, when we talk to like performance athletes, and you would fall in this bracket, is when meal timing actually really does start to play a role. So I'd like to know kind of what time your runs are. If you're running early morning, then having a big carby dinner the night before is a really good idea for you. And then maybe after said run, and then kind of getting back to normal. But it is a nice idea to basically have to buffer maybe 1 to 2 meals pre and post run with a higher carb intake. We can likely do that, as we keep saying, on lower calories. Again, I think people hear, oh, a higher carby meal, well, I'll have to go higher calorie. Not necessarily. Maybe it depends how low your calories are. Maybe, but not necessarily. We might be able to do that very easily and happily within calories and just pull from carbs and other meals that aren't around your runs.
Like have a lower fat day.
Exactly, right? Remember, you're going to get more bang for your buck recalories if you go lower fat than you are if you go lower carb, because fats are higher calorically than carbohydrates are. So again, we do hear a lot of carb fear and food fear and calorie fear, and it's like carbs are quite easy to deal with in terms of being on a low calorie diet. Fats are harder. And that's pretty much what I'd say, but feel free to tag us and we can kind of give you a bit more of like instruction and coaching around this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say carb up the day after. I would definitely do it the day before or the day of, depending on when you're running. Also consider how long your runs are, because a lot of people, and this was maybe more common. In fact, I think people do it, still do it all the time, is they'll hear that, I don't know, you should be fueling your runs. So they'll drink a load of Lucozade beforehand, or they'll have a carbohydrate gel during their 5K run. And it's like most people don't need to do that at all. You're doing like really serious endurance training. Yeah. Anybody else? No, probably not. And don't look at what elite level athletes are doing and think that you need to do the same. You don't.
Yeah.
Probably going to be consuming more calories in the Lucozade that you chug down during your 5K run than you actually expended during the run. And if fat loss is one of your goals, you don't want to be doing that. And it's not a limiting factor for your performance at that point, right? You don't need to carb up because you'll have ample glycogen stores in your muscles. So, if you come back to us and you're like, oh yeah, I do 3 5Ks a week, you probably don't need to change anything, and you probably don't need to increase your carbs for that. If you wanted to, you could be like, oh, on that day, instead of eggs for breakfast, I have porridge. Cool. Now you're having a higher carb, lower fat meal instead of the higher fat, lower carb meal the day of your run. Fine, but realistically, you probably don't need to do that. Now, it also depends how serious you are about training. There's also benefits to training sometimes in a low carbohydrate state. You get more endurance adaptations, and then you would race in a higher carbohydrate state. Or you might do, like, if you're training for a marathon and you've got a kind of a longer, slower run one day, I would probably, if I was doing this, I'd probably do that in a low carb state, better endurance adaptations. And then if I had like a tempo run or like race pace type run, I would do that fueled with carbs. So again, there's no like distinct, you always need to do this before you run. And it really does depend on what sort of running we're talking about. I don't think, like the same advice to quote unquote runners could be really useful or actually really unhelpful depending on the context. So do tag us and let us know exactly what that.
Yeah, it's such a good point as well to touch on the length of time. I'm just trying to, is it 2000 calories worth of glycogen your body can store at any one time until you hit that?
Yeah, it kind of depends like how much muscle mass you have,
Yeah.
obviously. But yeah, roughly.
Give us a little tag and we'll go from there. Okay, so Anything else on the live?
No, we're up to date.
Okay, Rachel. Hi, both back after a hiatus. I think it's an hiatus. Just putting it out there. Yeah, really. I think whenever it's an historic and hysterical, I think so, yeah. But that's really, really, really annoying. I feel like the only people that really do it are newsreaders, and I always wait to see if they're going to do it or not, and they do. Okay, it feels good to get some structure back. Training and steps are second nature now, and pretty much always hit my targets. It's nutrition that's getting the better of me. We're sensing a theme here, guys. This is always the way, by the way. This is why we said it in the last live. You are not the exception. You're the rule. Everybody struggles with this. That's why you guys are here. Training and steps are second nature now. Pretty much always looking at my targets. Nutrition that's getting the better of me. I'm feeling that this is quite common. Yeah. Work days and weekends tend to be busy and I can keep on plan better. My trickiest day seems to be the day that I have at home with my toddler on a Tuesday. I find myself reaching for sweet treats or if I get out and about, coffees and cakes. Other than just the reality check and tough love, any tips? So we kind of talked about this in the last live on Sunday about curating your environment. I know it's a bit trickier with kids, but it is about maybe getting rid of the foods that you reach for that you're not necessarily hungry for physiologically, but you're just hungry for psychologically, or your behavior is just in a pattern now where that's what you do. So just get rid of it. So that's not an option for you anymore. And actually, Emma and I have talked about this on multiple rounds with clients before. We're not really actually that mad at you guys going out and having a coffee and a piece of cake. We actually would much prefer that you did that to keep those things in your diet that you do like that are going to stop you from throwing in the towel if you cut them out without having all that crap at home. We actually quite like that approach. So there is maybe a conversation to be had about that. Curate your environment, get rid of all that stuff, and then go out for coffee and cake with your toddler and let that be the kind of treat that you have that day, and you get to take him out and about and yay. Emma?
Yeah, I agree. Like, choose your indulgences and actually enjoy them. Mm-hmm. Like, skimp on the getting a piece of, like, the leftover piece of toast or like half a biscuit that your toddler's slobbered all over but it's just leaving. And actually sit down and have something that you really want and you're excited about. And if you get there and what you were really excited about looks like it's been, you know, like if you're like, oh, I really want a croissant, it just looks like it's been sat there all day and it's not nice, don't fucking have it. Like just have like higher standards, you know, like I, you know what, if I really want something, I'll have it. But if it's just there, I'm not going to have it. And it takes a little bit of time and like conscious effort and being more mindful about the choices that you make. But if you're like, yeah, okay, if I want to have like, I don't know, three nice indulgences this week, what does that look like? Oh, it's going for really nice hot chocolate because we always do that on a Friday after nursery, and it's doing this and it's doing that and it's going out for brunch with my friends. Cool. You'll enjoy them more if you think ahead and you pick them rather than just like a gross old croissant that's been in Costa for like 3 days.
You pick the worst thing. There's nothing more disappointing in life than when you bite into a croissant and it's basically a piece of cardboard and it's like you did not understand the assignment. Croissant should be
sticky. My mum got one when we went out for lunch the other day and I was like, that looks so crap. Like, why would you?
And when you tear it apart and it's like breaks apart like crap cardboard, you're like, this is not what a croissant should be. Should I tell you the worst place in the world for cardboard croissants, where you will never not get a cardboard croissant, is in the green room in every TV studio across the country. Every single time you see that plate of croissants, if you know, you know, you're like, I'm not touching that plate of cardboard crap.
Do you think it's just been there for ages?
Yeah, some poor like 20-year-old runner that was once me that's gone out, bought loads of croissants at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and then before you know it's 11:30 and they've just been sat there in this stale air-conditioned room and they're just crap nonsense croissants.
Also Cafe Nero.
Also Costa. Also any chain coffee restaurant, do not buy a croissant from these places, people. Pret, I will accept. Pret can do a good croissant.
Where would you get a really good one?
Oh, I mean, if you're talking to a London snob, I'm going to be like the Wolseley in Piccadilly. People are going to be like, yeah, okay. You know what? The supermarket ones are really good, especially the fancy ones, like M&S and Waitrose. Yeah. They're four all butter croissants. It's like a staple of my Christmas morning.
Yeah, do you know what? But there's something you can't go cheap on. Like you
Yeah.
can't just get like the normal Tesco ones. You have to get like the what are they
Yeah.
called? No, not essentials. The premium.
Yeah. Yeah. Dutch original croissants. I
Yeah.
mean, the clue is in the name. It's called a croissant. I mean, this is fancy shit we're talking about, guys.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing on the live. Okay,
No.
let's do the last one. Because I really want to end this before Bodhi comes back and ruins it, like she always does. Elizabeth, hi, dearest. I asked this in a post, but I thought it might help others as well. So here it goes. I'm doing the home weighted workouts at the app. This is the rep range one.
Okay, we covered that pretty well.
Okay, should do one more then. Okay, Sarah, I've heard you mention that some people's hunger ramps up as you increase their activity, and some people's can ramp down. I'm afraid I might be one of those people who hunger ramps up. Is this going to last forever, or just while I'm adjusting to the 10K steps? Thanks as always. This is psychological because 10K steps is not what we're referring to when we talk about like crazy activity levels impacting hunger. I mean, with it, you'd really have to be doing like quite a lot of activity, be it, I don't know, cardio or lifting. And really like in quite we tend to find it's more like in a cardiovascular kind of range of exercise, more than like resistance training, for example. And it's really clients who are coming to us and we look at the step count and we're like, oh, we look at the cardio and we're like, that's a lot of cardio that we find it with. I don't think I've I don't I wouldn't correlate increased hunger to you doing 10K steps. But feel free to tag us and we can look at your numbers, your steps, your workouts, your cardio, your calories in, and I can determine whether or not what I've just said in fact doesn't apply to you. So we'll see. Tag us.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think so much, and it's so underrated of how you feel hunger-wise is expectation.
Oh,
So if
yeah.
you read somewhere, oh, you know, if you increase your steps, you might feel more hungry, then the likelihood is you will feel more hungry. This is why we always kind of debate talking about it, because I'm like, is that helpful for people? Because we know that, like, and there's so much research around this as well, even from a physiological standpoint. I always talk about this study, but giving two people the exact same milkshake, or giving the same person the exact same milkshake, but one time telling them that it's slim fast, low calorie, and one time telling them that it's indulgent, their genuine hunger response, not just like perceived hunger, but ghrelin levels in their blood changes. It is the exact same. So
Yeah.
the same thing can happen with like any expectation around hunger, which makes it really hard to talk about. So I would kind of just be consistent.
Yeah. We have to say that, and then it's you always feel like it's a risk that people are gonna be like, no, fuck you. I do feel it, and you're like, oh yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. I love the milkshake study, and I love that I don't think we've ever done a podcast without you, a
No.
podcast without you mentioning the milkshake, but I love it. I'm fucking here for it. It's the best.
Yeah. Okay, there's a question here which we'll do, and then we can wrap up. Okay, I remember you talking about creatine monohydrate. Are all creatine supplements created the same? No, take creatine monohydrate. Is there any benefits taking them at a certain point in the day? Not really. I would take them with a meal. I've seen packets with 5 grams a day as recommended, and others with 15 to 20 grams per day. That's a loading phase. You don't need to do the loading phase. How much is optimal? 3 to 5 grams a day is absolutely fine. Have it with a meal if you're worried about digestive issues. Make sure you drink water with it. That's literally it. But yeah, stick to creatine monohydrate.
Yeah. Okay, guys. I'll post in the group when we're back for the next live.
Okay. Bye.